This is part 13 of Your Life is Their Toy by Dr. Emmanuel Josephson from 1948. Restraint of drug trade. Steadily during the past three decades, the monopolistic restraint of the American Medical Association over medical advertising to the profession and to the public has become more absolute. At the same time, it also has become progressively less fair, less honest, and more arbitrary in its attitude toward the manufacturer. This is illustrated by some of the grounds for rejection of products, the conditions for acceptance, and the actions taken. The applicant for quote-unquote acceptance of a product must agree in advance that the association will not be held legally liable for any damage sustained as a result of its actions. It is doubtful that such a stipulation barring redress would be ruled illegal by the courts in case of tort or libel. But in case of legal contest, the manufacturer stands at so great a disadvantage with regard to medical and public opinion that even if he should win a lawsuit, his financial losses would overshadow his gains. The pharmaceutical manufacturers, like the rank and file of the medical profession, are deprived by the AMA of their constitutional rights by this racket that does not trouble itself to stay within the skirts of the law in its coercion and restraint. Charges of medical monopoly in restraint of trade have been brought against the American Medical Association before a U.S. Senate committee in 1930, and similar charges against Dr. Morris Fishbein and his association were brought before the Federal Trade Commission in 1931. It is a tribute to the power exercised by the AMA that these obviously true charges have come to naught. Grounds for rejection arising from the character or quality of a drug preparation and from its lack of medicinal value are understandable, but the association and the council have fashioned additional arbitrary rules, of which the following are samples, for clubbing manufacturers and dominating their business. 1. The AMA and its council assume the right to dictate the name under which a drug preparation is marketed, and of arbitrarily ordering a change of name. 2. A drug product may be rejected no matter how valuable it may be, if it has been developed and marketed by a firm that has not submitted its other products for quote-unquote acceptance, or if the council has chosen to reject other of its products. 3. Drug firms may not use in their advertising or literature reference to the scientific work of any investigator who is not a member of the AMA or approved by it, and everything must be submitted for censorship to the AMA. This rule is especially severely applied to prevent dissemination of knowledge of non-surgical methods of treatment of conditions for which surgery has been made accepted practice. Wow. The first rule serves the purpose of turning over the business of a firm to a competitor, or of forcing a firm to enormously increase its advertising expenditures. A rose by any other name. An instance of arbitrary order of change of name of a product by the council as a condition for quote-unquote acceptance and access to many of the advertising media of the country is antiphlogistine. This product is a heat-retaining substance impregnated with counter-irritants. Its use is external. It has been in general use by the medical profession for a longer time than the American Medical Association has existed. And the results of its use have been uniformly satisfactory. Under these circumstances, there would appear to be no reason why the firm should not be permitted to continue to serve the profession and the public. The AMA and its counsel, however, demanded as a condition for quote-unquote acceptance that the name of the product be changed to Cataplasma kaolini. This would have involved the loss of the goodwill entailed by the name antiphlogistine that had been built up in a period of more than half a century of service to the public and the profession, and through the expenditure of a fortune in advertising. It would have meant abandoning a part of the trade and market built up by the firm to competitive firms who would have the privilege of marketing a similar product under the same name. The competitive firms would benefit from the advertising which the firm would be compelled to place in order to acquaint its following with the new name. The chief beneficiaries of the AMA Ukasi would have been its own advertising business and the businesses of the competitors thus favored by the association. Arbitrary orders of change of name are becoming more frequent, and failure to comply by the prejudiced firm is becoming more often the basis of quote-unquote rejection of drug products. One such recent order resulted in barring the Abbott Laboratories from continued advertising of one of its products originally marketed under the trademarked name Nembutal within a short time after the death of quote-unquote Doc Simmons. Depression-proof quote-unquote business. The AMA and its bosses have seized tremendous commercial power through the testimonial rackets. As their domination of the drug industry has become more absolute and arbitrary, the opportunities for making it profitable have proportionately increased. The annual report and balance sheet of the American Medical Association amply attest to this. For the year 1936, the association reported a new high, $1,400,000, in its steadily rising profits that were in no wise checked by the Depression. The Journal of the American Medical Association has become one of the most lucrative advertising media in the country. The powers which they exert over the drug industry are sufficient to ensure its journals as much advertising revenue as they desire. There is nothing to indicate that advertising is the sole source of profits derived from the monopoly set up by the association, or that all the profits which accrue from it are to be found in the balance sheet of the association. Quote-unquote digging up advertising. an illustration of how the AMA can increase its revenue is the experience of the firm of blank and company. The full name is omitted because the firm fears the reprisals of the AMA and threatened to deny the story if their name is mentioned. Blank and Company manufacture and market, through their pharmaceutical division, some of the most reliable endocrine gland products available on the market. In the past, they have marketed and advertised these products without making any assertions or claims of curative or therapeutic value. Their labels merely stated the gland from which the preparation had been made and the method used in its manufacture. No policy could be regarded as more ethical or honest, and none could better serve the interest of the public and of the medical profession. But the ethical marketing policy of Blank and Company did not serve the interest of the American Medical Association and its bosses. For Blank and Company found it unnecessary to push their products in expensive advertising campaigns. Their quality was known to the profession, and their honest labels served to sell them without high-pressure advertising. As a consequence, the American Medical Association did not get much of the Blank and Company income through the route of its advertising department. The representatives of the AMA openly pressed the Blank Company for more advertising business. They made no headway because the honest policy of Blank and Company in making no therapeutic claims for their products made them invulnerable to intimidation, coercion, and other forms of racketeering. A new line of approach to Blank's advertising funds was then laid. The company was given to understand that it was expected to make claims of curative or therapeutic value for its products as a condition for their acceptance. The object of this ultimatum, which negates completely all principles of the quote-unquote ethics of drug marketing laid down by the association itself, and violates the interests of the public by encouraging self-medication, was quite apparent to the officers of Blank and Company. Quote, "They are trying to get us out on a limb," unquote, said a spokesman of the company, quote, "by forcing us to make claims for our products. They will then be in a position to force us to take as much advertising as they wish," unquote. Nevertheless, Blank and Company did not dare to disobey the UKASI. They are now making a gesture in the direction of therapeutic claims on such products as Adrenal Cortex. The inside covers of the boxes now bear the legend, quote, "uses pernicious vomiting of pregnancy," unquote. The AMA avenges its henchmen. The adrenal cortex hormone is so important a substance that it has deservedly been given the name, quote, "vital hormone," unquote. It was originally isolated by several workers, including Stewart and Rogoff, Hartman and others, about 1928. Commercial preparation of a highly purified product was made possible by the findings of Doctors Swingle and Fiffner of Princeton University, and they sold the patent covering their method of preparation to Park Davis and Company. When Professor Swingle and his co-workers obtained their patent, personal jealousy between the groups of research workers flared up into venomous hatred. The AMA sided with a member. The product was rejected by the council without consideration of the facts and with deliberate distortion of the truth. Advertisement of the products was barred in all the journals and magazines dominated or influenced by the AMA. The editor of Science, Dr. J. McKean Cattell, announced that he would not accept any further publications on the subject after the appearance of important initial reports. How thoroughly intimidated are even the reputable drug houses by the AMA is revealed by the fact that Park Davis and Company did not dare to fight back at these false and demonstrably malicious attacks on their preparation of the hormone, in spite of their large investment in it. They undoubtedly feared that if it should make any semblance of fighting back or attempting to defend themselves, the malicious reprisals in other directions would follow, which would prove to be even more costly financially. The AMA published fictitious analyses of the product, which were absolutely belied by the investigations of some of the most distinguished chemists of the land. The product was falsely pronounced to be worthless in publications in the AMA journals, and no replies were permitted to enable disproof of the utterly false allegations. Libelous attacks were made on the product in the journals of the association and in letters written to intending users. The market for the product was virtually destroyed. Quote, high binders or racketeers, unquote. Mr. Loesser has had the admirable courage to openly expose in a 1936 publication of his firm, named the Journal of Intravenous Therapy, the quote-unquote acceptance tactics of the AMA, in an article entitled State Medical Society Protests Misinformation and Misconduct of Counsel on Pharmacy, Expositions of Counsel Methods and Frauds Perpetrated on the Medical Profession. Mr. Loesser related the experience of his firm. Fishbein and his AMA Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry, Mr. Loesser reported, had persistently rejected and condemned the products of Loesser Laboratories, which pioneered in the field of medical preparations for injection into the veins. One fine day, the AMA sent an agent to solicit advertising for its journals from Loesser Laboratories. Quote, we were informed that the council would accept one product to allow advertising in the state medical journals. It required acceptance of two to allow advertising in the journal of the AMA. The council informed us that U.S. pharmacopoeia remedies are beyond their scope, a subterfuge and untruthful, clearly indicated by the number of USP products in the new and non-official remedies, the list of accepted drugs, some under coined titles, every one a violation of the council rules. They suggested Loesser's intravenous solution of mercury oxycyanide, and it was accepted by the council. For approximately 3 years, Loesser pharmaceuticals were advertised in many of the state medical journals. Having in mind statements of the council regarding the rules, we were astounded by the council's acceptance of a solution of calcium chloride with the addition of urea under a non-descriptive title and the appearance of the advertising in the Journal of the AMA. We asked for an explanation, pointing out that this preparation violated the rules as to simple scientific solutions and the non-descriptive name. Why should an ethical product be confined to state medical journals and a non-conforming pseudo-scientific imitation be given an advantage in competition? This and other acts of discrimination and later conduct confirmed our belief that Dr. Fishbind and the council were merely acting as agents for favored firms. The unsatisfactory and evasive replies prompted us to cancel our advertising contract with them. High binders or racketeers. Shortly after the cancellation of advertising contract, the council published in the Journal of the AMA what were purported to be refusals to accept several Loesser pharmaceuticals. We present reprint of one regarding Loesser's intravenous solution of calcium chloride, the advertising of which repeatedly appeared in state medical journals and the literature approved by the council's own committee. We urge every physician to scrutinize the council's statements and compare the numbered paragraphs with our corresponding numbered statements of facts. By doing so, you will realize that state medical societies act wisely in demanding honest information. It will give a physician a comprehension of the tactics employed by this supposedly scientific group. It is hard to see in what manner these activities of the AMA differ from the ordinary blackmailing rackets, unquote. Fishbein nullifies the Constitution. Having tasted the fruits of limited and indirect monopolistic control, Fishbein and his association have conceived grandiose ideas of an absolute and direct monopoly of the drug industry. As the first step in such control, Morris Fishbein and his cohorts are bending their efforts to throttle scientific organizations with the prime purpose of monopolizing completely all avenues of publication of matters pertaining to science. Morris Fishbein and his cohorts are bending their efforts to throttle scientific organizations with the prime purpose of monopolizing completely all avenues of publication of matters pertaining to medicine. In this manner, they will be able to avoid any leak of scientific information to even the scientific groups interested, and will be able to completely bar any publicity to the general public. The first move taken by the association in the direction of attaining this objective that came to the notice of the public was the throttling of the publication of a paper on a new synthetic drug by Hermann Seidel before the Chemical Society at its 1937 convention. Seidel's drug is no worse or better than numerous drugs extensively advertised in the journals of the AMA. And in being non-poisonous, it is better than some there advertised. It was tested and approved by a number of competent physicians. On the usual pretense, protection of the health and lives of the public, Fishbein and his clique undertook to abridge the freedom of speech of the members of a society which is in no wise connected with the AMA. They demanded that Seidel be prevented from presenting his paper, and the society acceded. It was amazing indeed that the press and the Chemical Society tolerated this wholly un-American infringement on the rights of others. This act was part of a scheme of expansion of the monopoly of advertising and publicity and the restraint of the drug and chemical industries. And that concludes part 13 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine by Emanuel Josephson, M.D., from 1948.